The gospel reading is found in Luke chapter 15. We begin at verse 1, and then after the third verse, we skip to verse 11. Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to Jesus. And the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, "This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them." So Jesus told them this parable. Actually, Jesus tells three parables, but we read the third of them, the parable of the prodigal son. Then there was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me." So he divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country, and there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country and began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he had come to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And let the fatted calf, and get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate." But this isn't the end of the story. "Now his elder son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked what was going on. He replied, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has got him back, safe and sound.' Then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him. But he answered his father, 'Listen, for all these years I've been working like a slave for you and have never disobeyed your command. Yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours comes back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him.' Then the father said to him, 'Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice, because this brother of yours was dead and has come back to life. He was lost and has been found.'" The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. I'm probably safe in assuming that most of you, if not all of you, have heard this story before. The parable of the prodigal son. We preachers are sometimes tempted, when we come to a familiar passage like this, to try to come up with some fresh approach so that it sounds new. You might try, for example, to preach a sermon from the point of view of the broken-hearted father as he waits for his son, or the prodigal son's point of view as he makes his long journey home, wondering how his father will receive him, or seeing things from the elder brother's point of view. One preacher even tried to preach it from the fatted calf's point of view. But we probably shouldn't mess with the story too much. It's just a great teaching story about God's love. It's a little like Grandma's famous recipe for chocolate chip cookies. You try to add something special like white chocolate chips or a little cinnamon. But when your kids bite into them, they crinkle up their nose and say, "These don't taste right. We like them the way Grandma used to make them." Well, we'll try not to mess up this parable too much by adding a lot of fancy chocolate or unnecessary spice. We'll try to let this story just speak for itself. The thing that catches my attention in this chapter, which has the three parables, is that they all end on a note of joy. The Pharisees were mumbling and grumbling about Jesus fraternizing and eating with tax collectors and sinners. Yet all three of the parables have a happy and joyful ending. In the first story, when the lost sheep is found, the shepherd calls together his friends and neighbors, saying, "Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost." Or when the woman in the second story finds the valuable coin that was lost, she calls her friends and neighbors, saying, "Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I had lost." And then in this third story, the parable of the prodigal son, it ends with that same theme of joy when the father says to his unhappy elder son, who refuses to come in to join the party for his younger brother, "But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this, your brother of yours, was dead and has come back to life. He was lost and has been found." The sermon title today might sound like a combination of contradictory words. Lenten joy. Sounds like an oxymoron figure of speech, like elementary algebra or jumbo shrimp or deafening silence. Lenten joy. Usually think of Lent as a season of sorrow and remorse. The color purple suggests a mood of sorrow and regret, not joy. Lent urges us to think about our failures and shortcomings. We might give up things during Lent that give us enjoyment or pleasure, like coffee or desserts or some other delight. Some churches don't sing the Alleluia during Lent. Now, there's plenty of sin and alienation in the story of the prodigal son, a lot of heartbreak, a lot of regret, a lot of humiliation. There's plenty of Lent in this parable, but it ends with joy. There are some Christians, I believe, who would seem to like Lent. They wouldn't mind if Lent lasted all year long. The main focus of their faith is upon our failures and our unworthiness before God. They seem preoccupied with the thought that God is so reluctant to forgive sinners that one has to keep trying harder and harder to deserve God's acceptance and earn God's love. They believe that God's love is limited, that God focuses attention upon a select group of chosen people to the exclusion of others. These religious folks try to keep up appearances to look like they're better than others. They look down on those who don't measure up to their standards of holiness. There's little joy in their religion. In the back of their minds, they worry that they're not quite good enough to receive God's love, though they would never admit this. And to bolster their own goodness, they compare themselves to others who seem less worthy. Now, maybe we have a little bit of that in our own Reformed Church heritage and theology. There is an old caricature of a Calvinist as someone whose number one fear is that someone in the world is having a good time. This fits rather closely to the description of the sourpuss Pharisees and other religious types who in our gospel reading grumbled and mumbled when they saw Jesus fraternizing with tax collectors and sinners. It's been said that in those days, sinners fell into sort of several basic categories. People who did dirty things for a living, such as pig farmers and tax collectors. People who did immoral things, such as liars and cheats. People who did not keep the religious laws, such as not washing their hands before they ate or working on the Sabbath. Samaritans were sinners because they were a racially mixed group of people. You didn't want to have anything to do with them. And Gentiles because they were not counted among God's chosen people. Barbara Brown Taylor, in a sermon on this text, suggested that if Jesus were putting together a table of sinners today, it might include an abortion doctor, a child molester, an arms dealer, a garbage collector, a young man with AIDS, an undocumented slaughterhouse worker, and a woman on welfare with five children by different fathers. Did she miss anyone? And don't forget to put Jesus at the head of the table, asking the young man to hand him a roll, offering the doctor a second cup of coffee before she goes back to work. Now, if that offends us, then we are almost ready to hear what happens next in the story. The local ministerial association comes into the restaurant where that group is meeting. They come for their monthly meeting and sit at a large table across the room. When their food comes, they hold hands to pray. But they can't keep from staring at that motley group in the booth in the far corner of the room. Now, this might seem like a different story from the one about the father and his two sons, but it's really not. The gospel writer introduces the story of the prodigal son with this complaint about Jesus welcoming and even eating with sinners. Jesus seems to understand the father with two sons who cannot get his family to sit down at the same table. The younger son is so ashamed of his unworthiness that he's prepared to eat the rest of his meals in the bunkhouse with the hired hands. And the older son is so self-righteous that he will not eat with anyone who has not earned his place at the table. Both sons suffer from the illusion that they can be in a relationship with their father without being related to one another. So what is the father to do? What the father does is to prepare a feast, a meal for both of them, and let them figure out what to do with each other. Now, this is fairly easy for the younger son, who is so glad to be back home again that he is not about to cause any trouble for his older brother or anyone else. It's more difficult, however, for the older son, who isn't even told when dinner is ready, and by the time he shows up and finds out that his brother has come back home, he feels he's been displaced, unappreciated, unrewarded. As if his father could not love two such different sons. In spite of the father's assurance that everything the old man has is his, the story ends with the older son standing in the yard while the father goes back inside to eat with the sinner. So, which son are you? Which son am I? Maybe we're a little of both. Like the younger son, we can waste our lives, our inheritance, perhaps not in riotous living, but we disappoint those who love us, including God. Even those of us who have been successful might at times feel that we have not lived up to what God expects of us. We feel ashamed. But sometimes we act like the older son, trying to earn the Father's love by our hard work, our dedication, or by looking down on those who seem less worthy. We become resentful of the love of God. The grace of God hardly seems like good news sometimes when it is spread so broadly. But this is a story about God's love for all of us and our need to celebrate God's grace. We need to celebrate and rejoice, says the Father, because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life, was lost and has been found. There is a passage in the book of Hebrews that says that Jesus endured suffering and the shame of the cross, not just to tough it out or be obedient to God, but he endured it all for the sake of the joy that was set before him. There is joy in heaven even when one sinner repents and returns home to God. Now to him who by the power at work within us is able to do far more than all we can ask or imagine, to him be glory in the church and in Jesus Christ to all generations forever and ever. Amen.